97.5, The Fanatic.
Pleasant Saturday afternoon to you and yours. Hope you're staying safe and happy and healthy. And welcome into 97.5 The Fanatic as we broadcast live from the Parks Race and Sportsbook here inside Chickie and Pete's in Malvern. We are here until 3 o'clock today. Come on down and say hello. Get everything that you could possibly need for your Saturday afternoon festivities. To my left, get every bet that you could possibly imagine put in place. And, by the way, if you win here, you get paid here, so you don't have to go anywhere else. And to my right, of course, you can get all your food and drink needs. And we are here until 3 o'clock today. So again, come on down and say hello. The number to join the conversation, if you cannot, as always, is 610-632-0975. I'm Tyler Zuli. Back at our Bala Cynwyd Studios producing today's show, that would be Mike Vito and Haley Taylor. We'll speak to both of them in just a moment's time. We do have a lot to get into and a three-hour run to do it. So why don't we jump right into things? You know me by now, I think, as somebody who does not have a propensity to care about prospects. Unless it comes to the NFL draft in which a player could directly impact a team right away, such as what I believe N'Kobe Dean can do, such as what I believe that Jordan Davis can do, such as what I believe that Devontae Smith did in his first season. Oftentimes, and more times than not, you have heard me talk about the moving of prospects for proven pieces, especially when it comes to baseball, but it doesn't pertain just to baseball. It pertains to all sports in which that there are tiered systems, in which that there are minor league systems, in which that there are developmental leagues such as the G League. And so when it comes to these kind of prospects, when it comes to these type of draft picks and these young players, more times than not, I am not hesitant. I don't think twice about moving on from said prospects and said players and said draft picks in order to obtain a veteran player who could help the team at its current juncture. And that is exactly what the 76ers did this week in trading the 23rd overall pick and Danny Green, of course, and acquiring a 24-year-old guard who can give you something that you desperately, desperately needed, which was scoring off the bench. D'Anthony Melton is not going to start for the Sixers, but I can promise you this. He is going to be an upgrade over the guard position that the Sixers have had over the last few seasons in the second rotation, in the second unit, off the bench. He's going to be more productive than Shake Milton. He's going to be more productive than putting the ball in Furkan Korkmaz's hands. He's going to be more productive than hoping that Mr. Stand in the Corner and Don't Want the Basketball, Matisse Thybulle, is going to be better than him offensively too. I'm not telling you that this is going to be the perfect match for the Sixers. I'm not telling you that D'Anthony Melton is going to be the guy that's going to come in and shake things up so profoundly that the Sixers are now going to be an Eastern Conference Finals team or a NBA Finals team or an NBA Finals winner. But I know this. It's been well documented that Doc Rivers is, let's use the word hesitant to be nice, hesitant to play young players, to play guys like Tyrese Maxey in his rookie season, except out of the extreme necessity, to play guys like Paul Reed and Charles Bassey, and instead opts for veteran players that he knows have filled rotational roles before and can fit what the Sixers are trying to do right now. And more times than not, I don't disagree with you if you say that some of those young guys should have played, specifically last year, because then Paul Reed was thrust into a role that he was not prepared for come playoffs, and it overwhelmed him. But in this particular instance, any point guard, any shooting guard, any wing player that the Sixers were actually going to select and keep with the 23rd overall pick, I find it hard to believe that Doc Rivers and the Sixers we're going to use them to their capacity in that player's rookie season in order to get the most out of the 2022-2023 season, a window, a year in which the championship window continues to get smaller and smaller and smaller as Joel Embiid gets older, as James Harden gets older, as Tobias Harris's future with the Sixers is continually up in the air. acquiring D'Anthony Melton, while it doesn't give you a league proficient scorer, it doesn't give you somebody who's going to shoot 9 threes a game, and in fact, it doesn't even give you a starter, is a better move for the Sixers this year and next year than what it would have been had they kept the pick and selected a player like E.J. Liddell or Marchamp or Hardy. Both of those last two guys have played professionally off the G League Ignite team. So at least they have some sort of professional experience. But honestly, I don't have any faith that if either of those two players were selected, even though I know that both of them can fill it up at the G League level, that Doc Rivers was going to play either of those two guys. And D'Anthony Melton isn't old, by the way. He's 24. He's still young. But in terms of veteran compared to rookie, he's now heading into his fifth season in the NBA at 24 years old. His contract is manageable for the Sixers this season. Gives them a little bit of cap flexibility. But in 23 minutes per game last year, he shot 40% from the field. He's a willing three-point shooter, shooting 37% from three. Gives you almost 5 rebounds a game, almost 3 assists per game. And the most important number for this Sixers team, especially considering he is going to be called upon to be a player off the bench, to be a member of the second unit, and to be a contributing member of the second unit, is 10.8 points per game last season. Last year, it was a career high in points per game at 10.8. He has risen his points per game average in every single season that he has been a part of the NBA. He's gone from 5 to 7.6 to 9.1 to 10.8. He has risen his points per game every single season that he has been in the NBA since he came into the league at 20 years old. And one more stat before we get to our friends back at our Bala Cynwyd Studios. D'Anthony Melton scored 791 points last year. Now, in totality, that's not a lot of points. I've seen guys score multiple thousands. Joel Embiid scored well over 2,000 points last season in his what should have been an MVP caliber season. Well, it was an MVP caliber season and what should have been an MVP season. So you think about 791 and 10.8, and they're not world-changing. But let me give you some of these numbers. Only three Sixers in totality last season scored over 790 points as a member of the Sixers. Now, if you were to add Seth Curry in, he would have broken that between the two teams that he played for, but he scored almost 300 of his season points with the Brooklyn Nets. So that means that only three Sixers scored more points, and obviously James Harden was on that list too, but he did not score that many with the Sixers. That means only Joel Embiid, Tobias Harris, and Tyrese Maxey scored more than 800 points for the Sixers this season. George Niang was the leading point scorer off the bench at 9.2. He scored 700. Then the numbers dip drastically. Furkan Korkmaz, 509. Shake Milton, 450. Danny Green, 366. Matisse Thybulle, 379. The point is that while I'm not expecting D'Anthony Melton to be a superstar or a star or a starter, I am expecting D'Anthony Melton to bring something to this team that the Sixers have not had in quite a while, and that is a threat to score off the bench. And if he can give me 10 to 12 points a game, that's more than I've gotten in years past, and specifically last year, from even the guy that you trusted the most in George Niang. So, while I understand that the draft has lost some of its luster for Sixers fans over the years because the Sixers aren't picking in the top 5 or the top 3 or have the number 1 overall pick, they're not making blockbuster franchise-altering moves and selections, whether it be positively or negatively, I also have seen some that were clamoring for a young player to be selected, for a G League Ignite player or a young college player to be selected. But the reality of the situation is with this Sixers team, Doc Rivers refuses to play young guys. I used the word hesitant the first time. This time I use refuse. Next time it may be even worse. But the reality is that Doc Rivers doesn't play young guys. So you drafted Jaden Springer last year. He didn't play at all, hardly played at all in the NBA. Spent most of the season with the Bluecoats. Do you want a similar fate for the next guy? Or do you want somebody who can help you win games this year? And so, as we start today's show, and again, the number to join the conversation is 610-632-0975. This trade was the right move for the Sixers. You aren't getting a franchise-altering player at 23. You got unbelievably lucky to have acquired Tyrese Maxey in the 20s a few seasons ago. But that happened more so because of the fact that Kentucky and every other college basketball team in the country did not play in a tournament, because there was no tournament, because COVID struck. Tyrese Maxey would not have been available had there been a tournament. So, while D'Anthony Melton is not a superstar or an X factor for your starting lineup, what he is somebody that I know that I can trust coming off the bench to put the ball in the hoop. It sounds simplistic, but the Sixers have had issues with it over the years. And that's why this was the right move for the team. I don't know specifically if D'Anthony Melton was the right guy, but acquiring a player of the ilk, of the quality of D'Anthony Melton, was the right move. 610-632-0975, the number to join the conversation. And before we get into the rest of our conversation topics today that regarding the Phillies, and specifically Aaron Nola, after he threw another gem last night, got a couple of fun side topics for you lined up as well. I want to welcome in our second and third members of today's show back at our Bala Cynwyd Studios. That would be Mike Vito and Haley Taylor. First and foremost, good afternoon to both of you. Hope you're doing well. And your thoughts on the D'Anthony Melton trade and not acquiring a young player, but instead getting somebody who could be a veteran off your bench.
Good morning. Well, good afternoon, Tyler, I shall say.
Yeah, it's still morning enough. It's still early.
We're getting in that peak of the afternoon time. But the Sixers acquiring D'Anthony Melton, to me, is a good move. With Danny Green not really being to his prime anymore, and especially after suffering that injury in the playoffs, there wasn't much that he could have brought to the floor. So having a player that does put up points, is a solid defender as well, I say this is a good trade. And, you know, at the end of the day, this is going to better not only the team, but the bench. And I think we need to really focus on bettering the bench besides thinking of our starting five.
It's a huge, huge importance this off. I mean, we've talked about it, you know, for the last 3 or 4 years now. But I think that this offseason is the one that they're finally going to focus on it. And this is step number one in bettering that bench. And as we laid out, right, like even George Niang, who was maybe the only guy who I consistently could say that we trusted over the course of an 82-game stretch plus the playoffs. He had cold stretches, but the reality was, more times than not, I knew what we were going to get from George Niang on a nightly basis. Outside of George Niang, there's nobody on that bench that I trust. I don't trust Shake Milton. I don't trust Furkan Korkmaz. I don't trust Matisse Thybulle, who may be a starter this year, but if he's not, I don't trust him off the bench either. None of those guys have fill-it-up potential. And I don't think that D'Anthony Melton even has fill-it-up potential, but I think what he does is provide you, as you were talking about, Haley, that consistency off the bench, which is such a critical piece that this team was lacking over the last couple of seasons. You saw when the second unit came onto the floor, specifically when this team decided that it was going to go all bench, which thankfully it stopped a little bit towards the end of the season and into the postseason. When this team goes all bench, it flounders. There's no question in my mind that this is not the only move that they need to make, but a substantial one, considering their hands were a little bit hamstrung with the fact that, you know, they don't have a whole lot of money and they only had one draft pick.
And it goes in the right direction as well. When we think about the bench, we think about the teams that are successful in the NBA, they all have solid benches. And if the Sixers want to get to that championship level, make it past that second round, they definitely need to improve that bench. And right now, as you mentioned, Tyler, they are making those correct steps. And no, I don't think this offseason is done yet. I think Daryl Morey will be making some more moves, hopefully. And we can acquire better players for the bench to be more successful.
Is Mike in there with you? Let's chat with Mike, too.
Hey, Tyler, what's going on, buddy?
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Whoa.
That was a little hot.
Yeah, a little bit. So, Haley, before we get to you, Mike, Haley, well said. I agree with
you.
This is something that has been a problem for a while. And we've all admitted it. We all know it. I think the team that deep down knows it, that the bench has been a massive, massive strain on this team. And again, like you said, let me rephrase what I just said there. I disagree with you in the fact that they're going to be making more moves, because I don't think this team makes many more moves to come. I think that you're going to see them run it back pretty similarly to what they were a season ago. But the difference is, the caveat, I should say, to that is I do expect this team to make another bench move in terms of potentially trading a player of the caliber of Shake Milton or Furkan Korkmaz or somebody along those lines to acquire. I don't know if it's going to be somebody who's a veteran. I don't know if it's going to be somebody who does one thing in particular, which maybe fill it up. And if you can't play any defense, then so be it. But I think that you're right when it comes to the bench. Where I disagree with you, however, is in the spot of them making more moves. I'm not so sure that anything else substantial. This may be the most substantial move that they make.
And that might be. I'm just hoping that we do get rid of Korkmaz for something. I've said that since day one.
Good luck with that. They're enamored with him.
I know. It will never end. But there's always hope, and you never know. But I do like Shake on the bench. There are players that I do like on the bench currently, so I'm not unhappy. But seeing something in return for Korkmaz, I wouldn't be opposed to that. And I think it's really realistic still,
Let me get cap relief. That's all. I know that that's not really financially the same when it comes to the NBA. Like, cap relief doesn't exactly work as easily as some other leagues do, specifically like Major League Baseball, for example. But any kind of cap relief is help for somebody that I don't feel that I can count upon.
Yeah, and that's a fair statement. I mean, at the end of the day, cap relief is cap relief, and I'll take that.
Mike.
Hey, Tyler.
Hello.
Hello again. That sounds a little bit better, right?
Yeah, sound a little bit better.
All right,
thank
you. Yeah, no, I'm happy with the trade. I said watching.
Sounded like you were in a spaceship.
Yeah, I don't know what was going on there. So we played a couple things here and sounds a little bit better now.
All good. I appreciate both of you guys back there and Lisa here engineering today's show.
Takes the teamwork, right?
Absolutely. I'm just here to talk. I don't do anything important.
Just seeing some of the reaction and all, it's kind of mind-boggling, I think, because people were expecting more. What could you really do? Your hands were tied. You know the money's an issue. You're up against it as it is. Unless you were moving a guy like Harris, which was going to be a really tough thing to do because of his contract. To get a guy like DeAnthony Melton in here, and you're moving out Danny Green. Now, really, you didn't swap much money there. It's maybe $1.2 million a difference in money if you would have had to pick up Danny Green's option. But the big thing it does is, it's been echoed around, is you're getting a guy that's going to help you now. Like, you draft somebody at 23, 24, whatever, I'm just saying in that range, that guy's not going to help you now in next season. Like,
and
that's somebody that has to be developed.
So important.
And that's where we are. So we keep struggling to get past this second round. And really, and a lot of people are worried about Harden as he's over the hill, this and that with the hamstring. I'm interested to see how he comes in. He's going to have a chance to work with the trainer this year in the offseason out in L.A. Come in. My thing is, we know what the regular season is, right? This isn't about the regular season
anymore. No, they're a good regular season team. We know that they're a good regular season team. They've proven it. They were one seed a season ago. They won, they've been into the 50s and close to it over the last five seasons multiple times. We know that they're a fine regular season team.
No, absolutely. And here's my thing. People may not like to hear it and want to say he's done, but I think you need to manage. I don't want to say load management, because we've done it with Embiid over the years, but I think there's something that needs to be looked at with Harden this year, is get him to the playoffs healthy is the biggest key to how much of a driving factor that this is going to go for the playoffs. If you can get over the hump, past that second round, into the conference finals, and hopefully to an NBA finals.
I'll take it one step at a time. I'm not ready to. I've done it before. I've jumped to the conclusion. And I know that whether you felt, Devon and I have talked about this many, many times. Whether you felt that the best chance to get to an NBA Finals was the Jimmy Butler team, in which Devon felt was the case, or you felt like more like myself, which was that two seasons ago, the year they lost to the Atlanta Hawks in Game 7, was the best opportunity to do so, simply because they had the number one overall seed. They basically had a cakewalk in the first round. That Washington team outright stunk in the first round. And quite frankly, I know we make fun of him for the horrendous season that he had last year, but the reality is, towards the end of the season for that Washington team, Russell Westbrook was dragging them into the playoffs with how well he was playing down the stretch. But regardless of which of those two teams you felt better about heading into the playoffs, heading into the second round, whether it was going up against Toronto in the second round or going up against Atlanta in the second round, we have been scorned by those two teams specifically so often and so many times over the last four seasons or over the last 4 years now that I am not going to even jump to conclusions of that. I'm not even going to get to the illusions of grandeur of which would be an NBA Finals appearance. I'm talking about getting out of the second round for the first time in five seasons, for the first time since 2001. And then we'll reevaluate from there. And if you're talking about just making a jump from round two to round three, from the Eastern Conference semis to the Eastern Conference finals, I know it's not as simplistic as adding one bench piece who gives you, you know, 10.8 points per night. And in reality, you're only getting about 4.5, 5 points added, considering Danny Green scored about 6 per night, and this guy's at, you know, 10.8. So you're talking about 4 to 5 points a game. But it's step one in figuring how you want to mold this team together. And even at the bare minimum, if what Melton is able to do is drop everybody down one slot on the bench and put them in a little bit more of a reasonable, feasible role for this team, that's step one in an encouraging direction. 610-632-0975, the number to join the conversation. On the other side, we are going to get into the Phillies conversation, of which I owe one player in particular a big-time apology. Now, I'm not going to apologize for the years past, but I will apologize for this season that he is currently having. We'll talk about that. We've got some fun side topics to get into as well. As we're just getting started here, we broadcast live from the park.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
Welcome back to, the show. And, of course, welcome back to Parks Racing Sportsbook here inside Chickie and Pete's in Malvern. We're here until 3 o'clock today. Come on down and say hello. Crowd's starting to form a little bit. Beautiful day out. Beautiful weekend. Cannot wait to be outside as soon as this show is over. In fact, I tried. Lisa wouldn't let me do it. I tried to get this show moved outside. They got a nice deck out there, a nice little patio to hang out in. Lisa said, nah, we got too much stuff. I tried. Believe me, I did. 610-632-0975, the number to join the conversation, as I absolutely just throw you under the bus, even though we did not have that conversation whatsoever.
I think that makes it even better.
Again, the number to join the show is 610-632-0975. Tyler Zulli, Haley Taylor, Mike Vito back at our Bala Cynwyd Studios. They are producing today's show. All right, I got to tell you who I owe an apology to. On the Philadelphia Phillies in about 5 minutes' time, you probably know who it is. You have heard me talk about this guy at length for years now. And I probably owe an apology to some people at the Fanatic, too. But one of them in particular, I will never, ever, ever admit that I owe him an apology, because I can't balloon his ego any further than it has been. And that would be Connor Thomas. So I'll tell you in about 5 minutes who I owe a Phillies apology to. But first, you know, we always like to open up our second segment with something a little bit more fun, a little bit off sports conversations, if you will, and kind of do a little bit of a side topic today. So this past week, I was not at the station, obviously, took a couple days off, and my wife and I took a little bit of a road trip, and we went down to Williamsburg and went to Busch Gardens. I am a huge, huge theme park fan. I've been a big theme park fan since I was a kid. I still act like a kid when I'm at theme parks. My brother is the same way. And so it was fun to get to get away and get on some cool rides and be at a place that I really enjoy. And it was even more fun to get to take my wife for the first time. She had not been there, so she was getting to experience all the rides and all the shows and all the, you know, watching me be a little kid. in the park. So it was really cool to get to spend that time with her. The problem, a problem arose about three quarters of the way through our day. So if you've ever been to, let me rephrase that. If you've never been to Busch Gardens, I will let you know that it is a big time roller coaster heavy theme park. Like all of the major attractions at that park are roller coasters. Some of them are brand new, one of which we're going to get to in just a moment. Some of them are very, very, very old. And one of them in particular was built in, I believe, 1978. And at the time, it was a state-of-the-art roller coaster. It was the world's tallest. I think it might have even been the world's fastest. It was the first roller coaster in the world to have interlocking loops. I mean, just a brilliant design for 1978. The problem with that coaster, and with many things that are based around technology and building and things like that, at nearly 50 years old, that ride has seen better days. And I think that those better days were a long, long time ago. It was, to put it mildly, it was rough. I was chatting with Mike Vito before the show started today, and I said to him, I'm not tall. I'm not short either, but I'm not necessarily tall. And my knees were like right up against the seat or against the car, the front of the car. And so Mike, who is probably about 3 or 4 inches taller than me, I said, man, you'd be like curled up in a ball trying to ride this roller coaster. So I have two questions surrounding theme parks today. And the first one I'm going to ask is, it's more of a philosophical question. The second one's more fun. Why, when it comes to stuff like that, like old school roller coasters and the like, I understand the nostalgia factor. I understand the legendary status factor. But I put out a tweet and tagged the park in it and said, yo, no disrespect, but this ride probably needs to, you need to start thinking about replacing this ride. And I got hordes of, I guess, Busch Gardens fans and roller coasters fans tweeting at me that basically I was an idiot. And it's no disrespect to the ride, and it's no disrespect to the park. It's one of my favorite places to be. But at some point, you have to recognize that the roughness, your head getting jostled around, my knees being tucked into the front of the car, are not productive to an enjoyable park experience. So I want to ask you two first. Outside of it being like, you know, a status thing, a legendary thing, why would you keep something like that running? And then second of all, why did I get like a horde of fans come at me? And none of them I knew on Twitter. It was all like podcasts of like roller coaster podcasts and stuff. Why are they all coming at me telling me that I'm an idiot when it clearly has seen its better days?
I think one of the biggest problems, Tyler, is people having a hard time adapting to change.
Letting it go?
Yeah. I don't know why. Change is not a bad thing. It's good for adaptation and all. But, yeah, people get caught up in it and just, for whatever reason, have a hard time accepting and grasping the change.
Now, listen, it was one of, when I was a kid, I've been going there since I was a kid with my family. You know, so when I was a kid, it was one of my favorite roller coasters in the park. The one I was too afraid to go on. A couple others were good, but that was my favorite one. And then as I get older, every time I go back, I say, I'm not riding that thing again. That's the last time I ever get on that. And quite frankly, the only reason that I rode it this time was, like, because I said, my wife had never been there before. Had she had been on it previously, I would have done everything in my power to dissuade her from riding it again. But we literally walked onto the ride, and probably understandably so, but we walked onto it. We got on the first car as it was pulling into the station, as we got into the queue, and she even said to me, she's like, that was bad. That was really, really bad.
Now, Tyler, I'm looking at this thread that you mentioned on Twitter, and
there's a lot of people that I have never heard of.
I like the one that says, ding dong, your opinion is wrong. But I can't believe how many people saw that tweet and reacted to it. The thing with the roller coaster is I like when they flow nice. I like a smooth ride. And there are plenty of rides that I can name. I'm a Six Flags person.
Sure.
That are very rough, like El Toro, which is a wooden coaster. And at the end of the day, the nostalgia, the history, I love that. That's amazing. And I'm glad I rode it. But it comes to the point where you get off the ride. I'm a little bit older than I was when I was a teenager.
And oh, yeah, you're so old, let me tell you.
The 23, but it does hit you.
The average age of this cast today, by the way, is like 27, 28 years old. We don't have any room to complain about being old.
We don't, but I feel it when I get off these rides. You're putting your body through a lot. So I think that the concept of how the ride is formed, I haven't been on the specific ride that you were on, Tyler, but maybe these engineers or smart guys, smart women, they can maybe come up with a similar type of coaster that kind of resembles it.
All I'm asking them to do is retrack it. They don't have to take the whole thing out. Just retrack it.
Oh, well, that's an easy fix.
But people think I want to, like, burn it to the ground and close the park.
They made it seem like that's what you're coming
at. No, all I want to do is retract the ride so it's not a 50-year-old track. That's all I'm asking for.
So, damn, people just love to overreact to things as well.
That one, well, that ride specifically, you know, it's rough, let's be honest. So the other question, because I was at this park, and they weren't all bad. In fact, that was the only bad one. They recently put in a brand-new coaster. And on the alternate side of that ride that was really, really rough, this new coaster was, despite the fact that it went almost 80 miles an hour, had multiple inversions, went backwards, was unbelievably smooth. One of the best roller coasters I have ever been on. Now, Haley, I'm glad that you said that you're a big rides fan as well. So I want to ask both of you, and then our actual question of the day. I put this probably up in like a top five ride I've ever been on. It's that good. So I know that not everybody's roller coaster fans. I know that people have motion sickness and they just, some people don't like roller coasters. It is what it is. So I'm going to ask a simple question. I am a huge roller coaster fan. This is one of the best I've ever been on. To you, what is your favorite theme park ride? Could be any theme park. Could be any ride. Doesn't have to be a roller coaster. Doesn't have to be a thrill ride. Could be a nostalgia thing for you. What is your favorite theme park ride? So I'm going to tell you that ride that I went on, it was called Pantheon, one of the all-time best roller coasters I've ever been on.
For me, without a doubt, it has to be Superman at Six Flags, Great Adventure. That ride, you lay on your stomach. It's a little uncomfy at first, but you feel like you are flying. And when I was a little kid and I went on for the first time, you know, I was really nervous. I'm like, I'm so scared. I went on and it was one of the most magical experiences of my life. I did the King Ka, I do all the thrill rides.
Sure.
But for some reason, that ride, the feeling of flying, without a doubt, was one of the coolest things I've ever experienced. And so to this day, I still get that feeling of magic.
We got stuck on that ride. Now, luckily, we got stuck on that ride pulling into the station, so it's not like we were in the inversion upside down or anything like that. But when you're hanging there, like, just chilling at the station, we were hanging for... It was probably
still
10,
a little sketchy.
Right, that's the thing. It was probably 10 minutes,
it's
right?
It's an experience.
But it felt like an eternity, because you're just hanging there, right? And quite frankly, the track was underneath us, right? The return track where it was like, you know, the platform and everything. I'm like, can you just unhitch us? I'll just jump down. It was like 2-foot drop. Just let me jump down.
But you're laying on your stomach, or were you sitting up properly?
No, we were still laying on our stomach. I was willing to take the risk.
That could have gone very bad.
Very bad, and that's why they didn't do it, of course. Mike, before we get back to the phones and we ask all of our friends, your favorite ride?
Yeah, I'm a big Six Flags guy myself. Haley mentioned El Toro. That's a great one. My one favorite there, though, is Nitro.
Nitro is great.
Just the speed of it and all, you're flying through it and all, just that one always hit me, and I enjoyed that one.
So that's going to be our side topic today, or one of them at least. We'll get into the other one in a little bit of time. What is your, again, doesn't have to be a roller coaster, just because the three of us gave one, it doesn't have to be a roller coaster. What is your favorite theme park ride? 610-632-0975, that is our side topic for the day. All right, I told you that I owe somebody a Phillies apology. And we're going to carry this one over into the 1 o'clock hour as well. I don't like doing this. I don't like admitting when I'm wrong. I'm willing to do it, but I don't like admitting when I'm wrong. I don't think anybody likes to admit when they're wrong. But it's about having transparency and quite frankly, you know, being an adult and admitting to the mistakes that you may have said on these airwaves. Because we always take credit for the good stuff. So I'll take, I have to take responsibility for the misses that I've had in this season and in years past. Aaron Nola has been tremendous, especially over the last 5 or 6 starts. He has been absolutely tremendous. But really, in the reality of the situation, Aaron Nola has been better, more times better than not over the course of this season. And the employee that works at this station, I don't want to give him a whole lot of credit, but I have to do it, is Connor Thomas. He said to me that Aaron Nola is a top 20 pitcher in Major League Baseball. And I immediately shot him down and said, I don't think he is. I think that the body of his work in totality is not good enough for him to be a top 20 pitcher in the league. However, with that being said, Aaron Nola has been sensational this season. Now, forget the 4-5 record. I do not care about wins and losses. We had a long conversation last Sunday about wins and losses for a pitcher. And I firmly believe that wins and losses, while they hold some merit, are not a distinguishably important pitcher stat compared to things like ERA and strikeouts per walk and WHIP and BABIP. And while Aaron Nola is 4-5 on the season because he gets no run support, or it seems that way, the ones that matter far more to me are the 2.98 ERA that he now has after throwing 7 incredible innings last night in a loss to the Padres. In 96 and two-thirds innings this season, he's 109 strikeouts. He's a sub-1 whip, and it's pretty wholly sub-1. It's not like it's .99. His whip is now down to .90 in 96 innings pitched. His strikeouts are up. His walks are down. And the biggest thing for me, for Aaron Nola, that I've noticed over the last couple of starts that I thought he did egregiously poorly in the last few seasons, and he did it in spring training too, which worried me a lot. And these worries have been kind of put to rest over the last, you know, 5 or 6 starts. He's not running his two-seamer back over the middle of the plate. He had a lot of control issues with that two-seam fastball, which I will admit to tell you, even when it's not in location, it does have good bite. It is not a flat two-seam. He has movement on that two-seam, even when it's not in a good spot. But too often, he has tried to throw that two-seamer in the past. He's tried to throw that two-seamer on the hands of left-handed hitters and run it back over the heart of the plate, or run it back over the inside portion of the plate, excuse me. And the issue is, he's missed on that pitch a lot over his career, and instead of throwing it on the hands and running it back over the inside third, he's starting it on the inside third, and it's running back over the heart of the plate, which, even when it does have bite and it does have movement, is a meatball, and guys take advantage of it. You've not seen that this season. And it's shown in the fact that in 96 and two-thirds innings pitched, he's only allowed 10 home runs. Last year, in 180 innings pitched, he gave up 26. In 2020, in the shortened season, he only threw 71 innings. He gave up 9, which means that in 25-plus innings pitched, in a difference between 2020 and 2021, he's only given up 1 additional home run. You guys know that I am not Aaron Nola's biggest fan. There have been times where he has frustrated me immensely. But I have to give credit where credit is due. When the whip is substantially down, when the home runs are substantially down, when the walks are critically down to 13 walks in 96 innings pitched, and the strikeout rate is up. The average is down almost 27 full points. In fact, it is 27 full points. The whip is down over 0.2. From 1.13 to 0.9, Aaron Nola's been great this season. And so, as simply as I can possibly put it, despite the fact that even though I still have reservations about a September fizzle, like you have seen over the last couple of seasons, he has been great far more than he's been bad or even average in 2022. And he is a critical, critical piece to this team's success. Last year, I said the key cog was going to be Zach Eflin because of the fact that I trusted Aaron Nola heading into last season. And of course, I trusted Zach Wheeler. And having that rotational key turn at the third guy, him being kind of the pivot point, was going to be massively important to this team's success. This year, at the beginning of the year, I said that it was Aaron Nola because last year I didn't trust him. And if he gives me trust, if he provides me with a trust factor that he didn't give me over the last two seasons, this team will have far more success than it has had in the last two seasons. So, as simply as I can possibly put it, I owe Aaron Nola an apology. He's been really, really good this year.
Yeah, he's been really good, Tyler. And honestly, the biggest problem I have when he pitches has nothing to do with him. It's the other side of the coin with the offense. I was looking at his games. The team overall is 6-9 in his starts. Three times they've been shut out this year. They give him absolutely no run support. So it puts even more pressure on him. Not essentially be perfect out there, but you want to go out there, give yourself the best chance to win, and his margin for error is very slim because the offense just doesn't give him a lot to work with.
Do you know one stat that really, I think, gets overlooked when it comes to Aaron Nola is strike percentage? And you're going to say, Tyler, you just talked about how his walks are down. How is his strike percentage important when I'm about to give you the number that is actually less than it was a season ago? His strike percentage this year is at about 66%. Last year, he threw about 68% strikes. The year previous, he threw 68% strikes. His career is at 66%. I think that Aaron Nola falls victim at times, and this is crazy to say, I understand that, but he falls victim at times of throwing improper strikes. And you're going to go, Tyler, what? You want him to throw more balls?
What?
Yes, in a sense. Want him to throw pitches with purpose. And pitches with purpose can be out of the zone. You'll notice that the strike rate, while it's down from a season ago, his strikeout rate is amongst where it needs to be. Like I said, at 109 strikeouts and 96 innings pitched. Because when you're able to get ahead in the count, when you're able to not leave pitches over the plate, and then you can go and attack instead of nibbling like he's done in the past with two strikes. When you can attack the zone, you can start to work out. You can start to phase out of the zone a little bit, get a little bit further out and further out and further out, and you figure out what's a strike and what's not to that particular umpire on that particular day. And then you can start burying changeups. And then you can start using your curveball to your advantage. So I know it sounds ridiculous for me to say, don't throw as many strikes. But his strike total is percentage-wise, is down, even though he's having a much better year.
No, I totally agree. I understand what you're saying with throw balls, because when you're dominating the way he can dominate games and he's locating pitches, if you can get those swing and miss chasing strikes or chasing pitches out of the strike zone, that makes him that much more effective.
610-632-0975, the number to join the conversation. All right, before we hit the break, let's go to the phones. We'll go to South Philly. We'll talk to Joe on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Joe?
What's up, Tyler? How are you?
I'm doing well. Appreciate you making the phone call.
Yeah, so right off the top of my head, it's been years since I've been to Busch Gardens. Was it Alpengeist or Apollo Cherry?
No. You know what's funny about Alpengeist? Alpengeist was unbelievably smooth still. I know it's older.
Yeah.
Right? But it was... So I said this to my wife before we got on. I said... She said, what's this ride like? I said, it's violent, but it's not rough. And she goes, mm-hmm. What does that mean? I said, it whips you around. There's a ton of inversions, but it's not going to feel like your head is banging against the headrest the entire time. So it's violent, not rough. No, actually, it was Loch Ness Monster was the issue.
The Loch Ness. That was the other one I forgot, the traditional coaster.
Yeah,
you want to talk about a whipping coaster?
Not good.
Remember Big Bad Wolf before they got rid of it?
Yes.
That thing used to whip you around.
Threw you around pretty aggressive. Well, because it was a hanging coaster, if you remember, right? Those hanging coasters were... prone to a lot of stress on the ride's fracture, and that's you threw you around pretty bad, especially down that hill coming around the towards the river, threw you around pretty bad.
It was cool. I actually saw a video on Big Bad Wolf. Pretty interesting. About letting you talk about the stress thing. So I'll get to my favorite coaster.
Sure.
But I stayed up and watched the game last night. I had nothing to do. It was the West Coast, so I said might as well watch it.
It's okay. Enjoyable
Aaron
game to
Nola,
watch. I mean
it was a pitcher's duel. That guy for the Padres is solid. He's a solid pitcher. He's good. My buddy was telling me how he's a pretty good pitcher. How he's only thrown he's gotten out of multiple innings with only nine strikes. Last 40 innings he pitched, he got out of them with 9 strikes apiece. He's really good. And then of course Nola was dolling. He was just painting the zone. It was incredible.
He was really, really good last night.
And that's what frustrates me is when I see Nola hitting throwing that. I think it was might have been like it might have been a two seam or a splitter where it starts to the left and then cuts right back to the like right inside the strike zone.
Yeah, it's that two seam that he throws on the left hand, especially to left handed hitters. And like I was kind of explaining, right? In theory, what he wants to do is start that either on the hip or at the hands and run it back. And that's why when it runs back, they do that little move where, you know, you kind of tense up and jump out of the way, pull the bat up. You're not, you know what I mean? And then it ends up being a called strike. That's the location he's trying to hit with that two-seam pitch.
Yeah, and he hit it a couple times last night. And Ben Davis was saying, he's like, it's sixth inning? He said he's still hitting 95 miles an hour with that.
Right.
So he's still got the velocity on it. But then the other side, you've got Bryson Stott putting the barrel of the ball in the barrel of the bat and, you know, popping it up. Harper popping it up with bases loaded. Schwarber popping it up with bases loaded. Then JT looking at third pitch strikes. Like, you got to help this guy out.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it was not an ideal offensive performance last night. And again, you know, like we've talked about, it's a long season. You're going to get shut out time to time. It happens. The way that I kind of, like, no shutout is good, but I guess there's lesser and greater shutouts. If you're going to get shut out, I'd much prefer you to lose, like, 8-0. You know what I mean? And you just chalk it up. Hey, bad game all around, really rough. You lose 1-0 and get shut out, even though I love pitcher's duels, that's a lot tougher to swallow just saying, hey, man, you needed to put one run across the plate, and this is a new baseball game.
Absolutely. And it's right at the end there, they had a couple men on in the ninth, so, you know, they just gotta get the run. So.
Yep.
So my favorite roller coaster is the first roller coaster I ever went on. It was the third pier of Maury's Pier on the boardwalk, and it's the Great White. And even after all these years as a wooden roller coaster, it's a little bit rough, but it's still pretty smooth.
So I am so hesitant to ride wooden coasters anymore. And maybe that's maybe that's a little snobbish, and I'm sorry if it is. But the wooden roller coasters, like you said, even though it's a little bit older, oftentimes the roughness comes into play, and I'm like, yeah, I don't need to get whipped around that bad.
Yeah, you don't want to get like a Bobcat experience over at Hershey Park.
Right.
That thing will beat the crap out of you as a wooden coaster.
Precisely.
I'm well aware.
Joe, thanks so much for the phone call. Really appreciate you joining us today. Thanks so much for joining us. 610-632-0975. And that's the thing, man. I know that it provides you with more of that traditional old school roller coaster feel. I don't need it anymore. But Mike, you were talking about, you know, things evolving and, you know, the steel coasters are so good at this point. I don't need it anymore. 610-632-0975, the number to join the conversation. A little late to a break. I apologize to both of you back at our Bala-Kinwood studios. The both of you that I just named, by the way, is Mike Vito and Haley Taylor. We'll speak to them again on the other side about Aaron Nola in the 1 o'clock hour. Continue the Sixers and the Phillies talk, and I ask you, what is your all-time favorite theme park ride? 610-632-0975. We broadcast live from the Parks Race and Sportsbook here inside Chickie and Pizza Malvern until 3 on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.